Bendicott, thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure.
Two full days into the conference, what dominant themes are emerging?
Oh, as always, there's quite a few. I think the need to be much more active in prevention, to emphasize prevention much more, and to really forge a strong coalition between treatment and prevention. I think that's come out very loud. I think the issue of groups at risk in concentrated epidemics, in other words, in regions mainly outside of Africa, men who have sex with men, injecting drug users, sex workers and their clients, that's been very visible. The March on Homophobia the other day, the excellent plenary presentation this morning, the Jonathan Mann Memorial Lecture by a colleague from Mexico. And thirdly, I'd say a lot of discussions about treatment scale-up, but also about the need to strengthen health systems.
Let's take the first one first, prevention strategies. Have you heard anything in the past couple of days that strikes you as a creative new direction to make prevention of HIV transmission more effective?
I'm not sure I've heard anything really new, but as always, you sort of hear new wrinkles on older topics.
And then what new wrinkles have you heard?
Well, I think if you think back over the last 2 years, we've had a fair amount of disappointing results in biomedical prevention, in the negative results of vaccine studies, of microbicide trials, of herpes suppressive therapy. All of those were of cervical diaphragms. All of those were topics that were sort of talked up in Toronto 2 years ago. Male circumcision has been a positive story, and we need to talk about scale up there, where it's needed. But the topic that remains to be clarified is the issue of use of antiretroviral therapy for prevention,
or the effect, prevention.
The effect of ART, antiretroviral therapy, on prevention. And there's two aspects to think about here. The first is what we call pre-exposure prophylaxis, that is, people taking antiretrovirals before exposure to HIV, like taking a contraceptive before pregnancy, for example, and you know the potential effect that has on blocking HIV infection. That's one aspect. We call it PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis. The other aspect is the use of antiretrovirals for people who need it for their own treatment, but what the effect of that is on reducing their infectiousness and their risk of transmitting to others. I think both of these topics are major talking points at this meeting, but in the absence of data. But I think we will get data or more data in the next couple of years.
You anticipated my next question. What kind of time frame is attached to this debate?
As far as the PrEP trials are concerned, I think we're talking possibly 2009 or 2010 for the first efficacy data. So, I mean, we do need to be patient. But there are several trials in progress, and I mean, I think we will get, you know, once the first data come in, I would expect that we'll have more and more coming in as well.
Okay, I wanted to move on to another topic, and that is the subject of what some people here refer to as the backlash against AIDS. It's being discussed here. There was an editorial in Lancet, the Lancet magazine that you responded to, in which it was said, we have a system in public health where the loudest voice gets the most money. AIDS has grossly distorted our limited budget. What are your concerns about this kind of debate? And today, the World Bank and the WHO had some kind of reaction to it. Fill us in.
Well, you know, there's an interesting analogy in this debate with the treatment or prevention debate, which dominated some years ago. It's not treatment or prevention. It's treatment and prevention, and we need a strong coalition between them. And I think it's sort of the same in this debate about disease-specific initiatives, sometimes referred as global health initiatives, such as PEPFAR and the Global Fund and programs for malaria and for tuberculosis and so on, and the need to strengthen health systems. I mean, we need both. We need strong health systems to deliver interventions for diseases that have names, I mean, for specific diseases that affect real people. Strengthening health systems should not be some kind of theoretical debate. At the same time, these disease-specific initiatives have the capacity to strengthen health systems and have done so in some settings. Well, they need to work together better because they have a common goal.
The idea is the rising tide lifts all boats?
Well, it's... I mean, in an ideal world, we have to make sure that happens. So one thing we do need is, you know, better analysis of the experience we've had to date. But the World Health Organization, you know, strongly believes that there is enormous scope for synergy, for a win-win here, to do better with the continued scale-up and at the same time to strengthen the systems that are delivering services in the first place.
Well, fill me in on this project that was announced today between the World Health Organization and the World Bank.
Well, it's a, and there's other partners involved as well, actually. It's a broad initiative to try to, first of all, get better information on what has been the experience. So many people express opinions that, you know, this has happened, that's been a negative effect, that's been a positive effect. We need good, you know, we need good data on this. So it's really an attempt, firstly, to have a thorough analysis of the experience to date, and then to define what knowledge we don't have, and to think about how to gather that knowledge. But there is a certainly an enormous need for research on delivery of interventions, because, you know, we epidemiologists or researchers doing clinical trials and so on, you know, tend to think, well, once you have the intervention, that's fine, it's all done. Well, you know, you'd never have an automobile manufacturer thinking that way, for example. You know, once you have your car, that's it. You actually have to deliver the product that you have, and that's actually a whole science in itself. So we need to, you know, think about these rather neglected areas.
One final question. It's one I've asked other people this week in Mexico City, and that is, what will be your definition of success at the end of this conference?
Gosh, well, I mean, I hope these are supposed to be scientific conferences. They're also enormous opportunities for networking and exchanging ideas. So I hope that, you know, the many many thousands of people who are here leave here with, you know, thinking slightly differently than when they arrived, at least with some new knowledge or some altered insights. And actually, I think I have myself already.
In what ways?
Oh, gosh, in several ways. I mean, I think my thoughts about treatment, about ART in the context of prevention. Actually, a subject that we've worked a lot on, the issue of HIV testing. I think our collective experience has been that the single biggest barrier, obstacle to universal access has been weakness of health systems and everything entailed, you know, everything that a health system entails. But I've also, talking to colleagues and seeing some recent data from Kenya, have sort of thought to myself, you know, probably the biggest obstacle right now to further success is lack of people knowing their serous status. There's some absolutely stunningly, to my mind, important data out of Kenya. They've just done in 2007, did a large survey of AIDS indicators. 18,000 people tested, 18,000 people participated in the study, random survey. Tested for HIV, very high uptake, 10,000 households. And for people found to be HIV infected, they did CD4 counts. So they were able to assess HIV infected people, what was their access to therapy. That's, to my knowledge, I may be wrong, but to my knowledge, this is the only country in the world where we have that data, and I think it's remarkable. They found that of HIV infected people, 35% knew that they were HIV infected and were accessing antiretroviral therapy. 2% knew that they were HIV infected, were eligible for treatment, and were not accessing therapy. The rest, 63% or so, were eligible for therapy, weren't accessing it, did not know they were HIV infected. The lesson from that to me is universal access needs universal knowledge of HIV serostatus.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much, Dr. Kevin DeCock. Appreciate it.
Pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much.
Great. That was fun.